Bay's Tan Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
It's time for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill Studios, across from Tropicana Field in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps and the pros across Tampa Bay and the USA. Get your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and your host, Mike Rickard and Ben Botham.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection this Super Saturday, September 9th, week number two of NCAA college football. Some great games today across the country. We're live from our Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, Ice Pick Vodka, Body Armor Studios across from Tropicana Field, where the Tampa Bay Rays, they returned home, obviously, and they are taking on the Seattle Mariners tonight in a great contest, and after a nice win last night as well. And then, of course, Ben Botham's not here right now, but Ben Baseball Botham will be in the house shortly. And he, of course, is a baseball coach up at Seminole. They've got a few things going on, and he's the bowling coach, so we'll get a little bowling update. And as I said today, we got Rays and Mariners across the street with a 4:10 first pitch. We'll talk Bucks and Vikings, college football slate. Got Gavin Van Dyke in the house to go over the high school scores from Pinellas County and Hillsboro last night. So let's play ball the next couple hours while we bring you a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros. And great job by the veteran, the pro. Paul Porter, so from 9 a.m. to 1 o'clock on the Tan Talk Radio Network. You can get the pro, Paul Porter, talking everything sports, the voice of course, the Lightning and Orlando Magic, and then we'll give you everything from the peewees to the preps to the pros right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network on our flagship WTAN 106.1 FM, AM 1340. That's Clearwater, St. Pete, Tampa. We're streaming live on RadioSt.Pete.com as well, reaching everywhere from Lake City down to Tampa, as well as Gainesville. And looking forward to launching our FloridaSportsStream.com. Hopefully we can get Paul to jump on board there as well. If you have a podcast and you would like to get on it on FloridaSportsStream.com, just message us at Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, and any content from the peewees to the preps to the pros, and we'll get you a podcast on the RadioSt.Pete.com platform. Of course, today in college action and our Fergs from the front row sports update, we got the Colorado Buffaloes in the biggest game, arguably early, after a resounding win and prediction by the man himself, Deion Sanders. Colorado and Nebraska, which is a rivalry that I've been following for decades, and it's great to see it have such significance again. Colorado, the Buffs are a 3-point favorite. Notre Dame, NC State should be a nice contest. Last night, Gavin Van Dyke, you and your pops, Kansas Jayhawks were happy people. And I bet you watched every snap of that game.
Second half. You pulled out with the win.
Turn your mic around there, young man. I think I put that one.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
There we go. Well, you know why you got a problem, because I actually set that mic up, and, you know, I stumble, fumble, and bumble. We got a great show, as always. Gavin will give us the scores here in a bit in our Body Armor High School headquarters. Jim Hart, J.B. Anderson, and, of course, David, they'll join us at about 12:15, and we will have our Rowdies report. Of course, they give away tickets, and they're home tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then my good friend, you know, I know you're tired of Iowa State conversation. It is Iowa State today up in the great state of Iowa. Great, great in-state rivalry. One of those that precariously may go away with all this movement in college football. But Dan McCarney, who also had a stint at Florida, got a national championship ring, and he was instrumental in for a couple of years in the launch of USF football under Jim Leavitt. Dan McCarney will join us at 11:40. Brad Richardson will come onto the airwaves, and he'll recap everything in high school football last night. And we'll talk to Jeff Williams. We're going to talk a little highlight. And then the big old Oscar Garner III, he will be joining us to talk a little college football as well. But let's get right to it. Let's get to our Body Armor high school headquarters scores from last night, week number two of high school football.
Yeah, we're going to start with Pinellas County. There wasn't too many close games last night. We have Largo beating Boca Ciega 33-10. Clearwater beating Countryside 56-6. Seminole beating Dunedin 48-8. Pinellas Park beating Eastlake 33-12. Northeast beating the Gibbs Gladiators 46-0. And Indian Rocks beating Brooksville Central 33-6. And then Lakewood actually lost to Homestead 35-7.
They're 0-3 right now for the year. Yeah, Lakewood.
Yeah. Definitely took a step back from last year, it looks like.
Oh, big step. Well, if you look at their schedule, it's brutal, and we'll talk to Brad about that, breaking it down. But for Corey Moore and the Lakewood Spartans to go to 0-3 is a tough start. Doesn't mean they won't make the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination. You know how that works.
Of course, yeah. Schedule looks to hopefully lighten up following weeks, but they still got to – they got to win some football games here soon.
Well, you know who needs to win some football games is your Boca Ciega Pirates, as you probably wear your bogey shirt, young man.
Yeah, and, it's looking a little rough, but hopefully they'll find their feet soon and get a couple wins up here shortly.
Hey, by the way, I want to properly introduce you. Gavin Van Dyke, of course, he just graduated from Boca Ciega. You went to Osceola for several years.
Yes, sir.
But if your mother's listening, thank you, dear. He looks so good today, cleanly shaven and got his hair cut. He looks like a real professional down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on 13th and Central, and he's going to do a great job. So I'm sorry. Continue the scores, and we'll go ahead and do volleyball today as well if you've got those in front of you.
Palm Harbor beat Sun Lake 35-2, which is an interesting score there. They got a safety, and that was the only score of that game. And some private school scores was Keswick Christian beating Winter Haven All Saints 26-17. And our Clearwater Academy lost to Palm Beach Gardens Benjamin 27-21. So they're off to a rough start to start the year here.
Well, the beginning of the year, they're all playing very tough schedules because of the point system.
Yeah.
And I understand that. Last night, of course, Marcus Pascal got back on the Schneid with a nice win over Gibbs, and you know those teams struggle to get where the haves and the have-nots are, and of course the Gibbs Gladiators excellent in basketball, track and field, and I just don't think they have the numbers or the depth to compete against the big boys on the gridiron.
Yeah, for sure. And Calvary lost to Carrollwood Day 34-56 in a shootout there. But that game surprised me. I thought Calvary was going to win that game, but they're looking pretty good this year, so they shouldn't have to worry too much. And St. Pete Catholic lost to Masters Academy 20-18. That was our final Pinellas County score.
Let's go across the bay to Hillsboro.
For sure. We have Armwood beating Hillsboro 48-12. Riverview beating Chamberlain 49-3. East Bay beating Sickles 31-20 in a good game, and Jesuit losing to Miami Columbus 14-42.
And that tells you Miami Central is one of the toughest teams in America.
Yes.
Because Jesuit, we know how deep they are, and Lakewood played Miami Central their opener last week, and they took it to them as well.
Yeah, they look really good this year, I'll tell you what. And Plant beat King 50-6.
Our good buddy David Sevier, he's got a challenge there, but he still has an opportunity to potentially win the district.
Yeah, and Tampa Bay Tech beat Newsome 43-7. Plant City beat Steinbrenner 34-23, and Hudson beat Pasco 27-0, and Mitchell beat River Ridge 54-19.
All right, my man, is that all the scores from last night that in the area that
yes, sir.
You've got?
That concludes Pinellas County and Hillsboro scores from last night.
Well, we are doing each and every, what are you guys doing it? Twice a week, we're doing a prep connection, Body Armor prep connection, volleyball and football update. Is that twice a week? What days are those?
Yeah, those are on Saturdays and Mondays that we'll have those out on the Instagram. So you'll be able to see all the updates and our power rankings for the football and volleyball teams in the area.
Beautiful. And we're also doing a Body Armor Player of the Week. And Brad Richardson will talk about that in the second hour. The last couple of weeks, we've had a young man from from St. Pete High, and then of course from Northeast. Of course, Coach Sean Davis. Sean Davis was going to come down. It's SATs and ACTs today.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do, and I'm glad I'm not there right now.
Do you remember what you got on your ACT?
I never took the ACT.
That was the big one back in my day. Now the SAT is the big one.
Oh, yeah. I remember I went to go take the ACT, and my mom put her name instead of my name, so I couldn't get in.
What?
Yeah. It says my name.
Oh, in the application?
Yeah, it said
I thought you wanted to take the test for you.
Oh, no.
That's going above and beyond there, Mama Van Dyke. Yeah. I thought maybe, I'm glad to hear that she didn't go in and take the test for you. Yeah, no. All right, my man. Well, now let's shift gears as we do each and every week. And it's a superb relationship that's been developed with the Rowdies. They take on Louisville City tonight, 7:30 first kick. But as I like to call him, the godfather of soccer, he is Jim Hart. And he's got J.B. Anderson and David on the line today. We're going to have a nice conversation. So as I always do, I pass the baton on to you, Mr. Hart. And a big shout out to all you fellas live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, where it's a football, not soccer, but it's a football Saturday. How are you, Jim?
Mike, I'm doing great. And unfortunately, Mike, Dave Wilson won't be with us. It's his birthday, and his wife surprised him with a weekend out. So it's just you, me, and JB today.
Well, bravo. So let's. Why don't you introduce JB and let's have a nice conversation.
Beautiful. So we asked JB Anderson to come on the show today, Mike. JB is from St. Louis, Missouri. He's part of a three-man group that does a podcast called The Soccer Dad Podcast. They cover soccer in St. Louis from youth to college to pro and even after. Cover the whole scene. But one of the interesting things, Mike, is that JB and his friends are not shy about talking about high school soccer, club soccer, and all that goes in it. Plus, the other cool new thing is that the Champions League has parachuted into St. Louis from Tampa Bay, so that's a new thing on the scene for them. So we thought JB would be able to give us some great perspective. JB, welcome to Tampa Bay, and introduce yourself to the Tampa Bay area.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Jim, thanks for inviting me on the show. Really looking forward to it. I'm JB Anderson. I live up here in St. Louis. We put together the Soccer Dad Pod kind of out of a simple excuse to have beers while we're watching our kids practice. that's how it came to life, and it's really just taken on a life of its own. Because obviously here in St. Louis, we have an extremely rich history with the game. Every block seems to have a soccer Hall of Famer, some pedigree and beyond. So we've had a blast doing it, and the whole high school versus club conversation has just pulled us into other markets because it's a hot topic in a lot of states.
Definitely it is. So really, the way to explain it is three dads watching their kids practice and play soccer, talking to each other, and basically said, hey, why don't we take this to the next level? Is that about it?
That's it. So I have a background in production and owned a record label, music studio, and we all played in our own lives in high school, college, and beyond. And standing there waxing poetic about what our kids' coaches should be doing or what our kids should be, improving upon, we decided, why don't we put mics in front of ourselves and give our wives less of a reason to yell at us for just standing around.
There's guys all over Tampa Bay right now nodding their head going, we should do that. So, JB, tell us about yourself. You grew up in Granite City, Illinois, in a soccer mad little town. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. Granite City is a steel town. U.S. Steel has a plant there. It was called Granite City Steel. Blue collar town, 25,000-30,000 people. No private schools. It was a public school town. And as a kid growing up in the 80s here in St. Louis at the time, indoor soccer was the bee's knee, really. St. Louis Steamers were the most popular team in the region. And during those years, the Steamers indoor team, they outdrew the Blues and any most NHL teams. 19,000 people a night to watch indoor soccer. And then the high school scene, it was all powerhouses. Because we were literally 10 minutes from the arch. I could see it from my backyard. And in Missouri, in St. Louis region, you had high schools like St. Louis University High, CBC, DeSmet, Vianney, that were pumping out national team players on an annual basis. And the competitive high school scene had a North Star in the tournament called Tournament of Champions, that my previous coach, Coach Gene Baker, put together in the 80s, and it lasted through the 90s. At the time, that tournament was ranked the number one tournament in the country year after year after year, and it drew every major scout from every major program, and it was soccer mecca when it came to high school soccer. So we were lucky enough to be part of that generation where it was firing on all cylinders. You know, it was common in any regular season game to see Joe Clark from SLU or the Indiana staff on site. So it was a special time, a bunch of special players that molded a lot of our opinions about the game, and which now spills over into the podcast. So.
Yes. Speaking of which, if you could take just a minute to reflect on your former high school coach. I listened to the podcast that you did in memoriam of Coach Baker. Just give our Tampa people a little flair for Coach Baker.
Yeah, so in St. Louis in the 50s and 60s, CYC soccer was it. All kids played in the parish league. And Coach Baker came from North County here in St. Louis. A blue-collar kid himself, his dad owned like 17 bars. So he cut his teeth sweeping floors.
Man.
That kind of person. And his approach to soccer was kind of commensurate. He was an elevated player in his own right, went to CBC High. He played at SLU on the national championship team. And then he brought all of that over to Granite City. And Granite City, on a given 18-person squad, you would have two or three truly skilled players, and then you would have 15 role players. And his methodology basically just built a team that believed in itself and a few very simple rules from a playing standpoint. And as long as everybody followed those rules, we would go to state, go up to Chicago, and come back with hardware. And after his career, they did the math. There's something like 250 graduates that ended up coaching at the high school, collegiate, and levels beyond. So his impact was far-reaching.
That's amazing. Now it's kind of fair to say that Coach Baker is a throwback, sort of a 20th century version of soccer. And I don't say that in any bad or good way. It just is. But can you contrast that with what's happening in 2023 in St. Louis, especially as pertains your kids and their decision to play or not play high school soccer? And how is that all playing out in St. Louis?
Well, St. Louis is really the, it's in the crosshairs of this debate. St. Louis from the early 70s, well beyond that, actually, through the Lamar Hunt Open Cups, no city in the nation has won more U.S. Open Cups than St. Louis, and these are all based upon community clubs for generations. And the clubs that are here today, they're still the powerhouses. You have St. Louis Scott Gallagher is the one that's at the top of the pile, which is a combination of the old Bush Soccer Club that won a number of national titles, and then Scott Gallagher Metro. And then we have clubs like Lou Fuse and St. Louis Development Club that are just stacked with high-level staff coaching these kids, developing, training them. And we're now we're populated with three MLS Next Academies. So everybody's aware of our new MLS team. We're in first place, by the way. So we have that academy, which is where my son plays. He's lucky enough to play. And then St. Louis, Scott Gallagher, and Lou Fuse. And what's happening is the kids that are going to these academies 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when they didn't exist, they would have been populating CBCs, St. Louis University Highs, and the Granite Cities of the world. And that's not happening now. So there's a growing debate and strategies primarily emanating out of the high school camps in trying to figure out how to combat that, how to compete with it, how to play nice with that. So it's a relatively new topic from the standpoint of at least now they're talking, the two camps, because at first there was no conversation.
Well, that's really important. And, you know, JB, from our communication back and forth, I'm a big advocate of something that we call the third way, which is that the two are playing nice and they are talking and they are taking advantage of what each has to offer and not getting in each other's way. And there's only 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, two semesters in a school year, finals come around, there's lots of priorities to balance. So as far as you're concerned, you personally, JB, how do you see this, the from the standpoint of a kid, and you have one at this age, how do you see this whole high school academy, how it's playing out and where it's going, plus factor in the advent of the Champions League, if you could?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things going on there. I think one of the areas that a lot of people are really ignoring, and I don't think enough attention is being paid to it, and that is the opinion of the kids in those preteen, teen years and what they really want, what they're looking at. Because with the explosion, the advent of social media in particular, and the growth of the game in general, not only due to FIFA, you know, the video game, but soccer's on TV 24/7. So their love affair, their passion for the game is greater than it's really ever been, specifically here in America. So my approach with this, with my son and some of the parents that I'm close to that have kids in the same boat, we're really trying to keep the conversation lanes open and determine what's your goal? You know, what do you want? What's important to you as a player, as a friend, as a teammate? Because these kids are motivated by things that we didn't have when we were playing ourselves.
Right.
You know, and then there's the reality of those of us that are in a position of power at these ages that are the coaches of these programs and boosters and supporters and alumni, we're living in a historical mindset. And the reality is if the academies existed 20, 30, 40 years ago, large chunks of us as players would not have played high school. So we're in an environment where these kids have tremendous opportunities, and we're kind of pitting it as a versus B option as opposed to, hey, C, let's see what the kids really want.
That's right.
So,
well, you know, JB, something I haven't told you about.
Let me interrupt here, gentlemen. We got about 5 minutes. I want to insert a couple of comments that as we talk on our Tampa Bay Rowdies Body Armor soccer segment. And, JB, I applaud you, of course, for what you did for the children. But I really like the concept of the kids getting together. I should have done that years ago with my children. I grew up in Western Iowa in what you would call a blue collar town, but we were stockyards. You guys were steel, but I'm just astonished, both of you gentlemen, being from that area, that Iowa was so backwards when it came to the world of soccer. You were talking 50s, 60s at Catholic school. I went to Catholic school in the late 60s and 70s. And if you played soccer, I grew up on, and this isn't a slight, but I grew up what they call Pollock Hill. And if you talked about soccer, you'd probably get the hell beat out of you. And yep. Here you are just 3 hours away in St. Louis. You got a bar owner, which I happened to be one at one time, and throwing down coldies and embracing the game of soccer. It just blows me away, being in the Midwest there, that was just a mainstream for you guys in that area.
Well, the thing about St. Louis and its history and its relationship with the game, it's based purely upon immigrant neighborhoods. You know, prior to 1950, soccer was present in the parishes early on, and then 1950 was really kind of the popular popping off point with the World Cup game with the U.S. team that defeated England 1-0. That team, the starting 11, there were six players that not only were from St. Louis, but they all lived within probably a quarter mile of one another on the hill, an Italian neighborhood where Yogi Berra grew up. And there was no football. There was no American football in those neighborhoods. There was no basketball courts. They played soccer, and that was it. So, you know, I actually played in the Quad Cities my first 2 years in college. So I had a lot of friends that came from Iowa, the rural parts of central and western Iowa. And, you know, soccer up there was a spring sport. So a lot of the kids were multi-sport athletes in football in the fall, and soccer was kind of an afterthought in the spring. Well, in St. Louis, soccer is a fall sport, and if you didn't make the soccer team, you would consider football.
You would consider it, yeah. That just blows me away. And I was very close to some of the people in Central Iowa that were instrumental in its growth, and they owned the Come and Go convenience stores, and they had the Des Moines Menace, and I was on board for that and saw that transition to where we are now. And then, of course, I didn't know Jim Hart was down here kicking butt and winning all these state championships at that time. So it's kind of a unique dynamic for me, fellas.
That's super cool, Mike. That's super cool. And it's great that we've had these connections. You know, JB, I don't know if you know this or not, but Terry Mickler and Greg Keller have also been on this show before you got here. So Mike's had this conversation once with some other St. Louis people as well. In fact, Terry and Mike were able to swap some pretty good stories, as I recall. But I do want to say this to you, JB. We are, getting back to your comment about what the kids think, I haven't told you this yet, but we are conducting a focus group, a pretty extensive one, of the kids in the Champions League, boys and girls, to get to the very point that you're talking about, because one thing you have heard me say a number of times is the market will tell us what it wants. The market will speak. And the market is really the kids. So I agree with you on that.
I do believe there's another part of that market demand. And it points to the sidelines, and that's the parents. The expectation of the parents, you know, we're spending so much money on club soccer. There's this return on investment, this ROI that they're looking for, in the growth of these clubs and into super clubs and expansion of academies and GA, et cetera. That wouldn't happen if there weren't parents willing to pay for it, and to a degree chasing the bright lights for themselves. And it's not really about their kid in a lot of these cases. So the Champions League, the expansion, and these changes on the high school front, more than welcome. It's long overdue, frankly, because for a long, long time, high schools didn't need to be creative because they were the only game in town.
Right.
And that shifted. So I love the competition personally.
Gentlemen, we could do an entire podcast on this, but I got to take a hard break and wind down this great conversation on our Tampa Bay Rowdies. Of course, high school youth and all the way to peewees, the preps, the pros, as we like to say on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. You guys are touching all the bases. And I appreciate you taking time to join us, JB. bravo on your concept. And we could talk about your recording studio and music, because we're heavily involved in that as well up here. But again, thanks for taking time on a busy Saturday, and have a great weekend.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the time, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jim. As always, we're going to take a hard break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to the man, Dan McCarney, when we return here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network.
The first quarter is over.
Never show weakness. Only pain that matters is the pain you inflict.
Keep your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Are you ready to rock?
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection with partner RadioSt.Pete.com launched a new sports streaming channel, Florida Sports Stream, on RadioSt.Pete.com. Florida Sports Stream provides local and national podcasts, radio shows, live events. The Tampa St. Pete Prep Connection will broadcast Florida high school boys and girls sports, live play-by-play coverage, media days, award ceremonies, positive stories and content across Tampa Bay, Florida, and the USA. From the peewees to the preps to the pros, recognizing positive participation in sport and the people that make a difference. Podcasts include NASCAR, Florida Fishing, MMA, Rays, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, local media personalities, pickleball, local colleges, FCA sports, Florida Sports Hall of Fame, and NFL Alumni Tampa. Just a few of the shows and podcasts with dozens on deck. That's Florida Sports Stream on RadioSt.Pete.com, supported by Body Armor, Sea Dog Brewery, Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, and Ice Pick Vodka. Take a listen and have a championship day.
What does Sea Dog Brewing and Shipyard Tampa Bay Tailgate have in common? Both are world-class experiences, owned by the same people. What a great place to spend some time with friends this holiday season. The place to be is Sea Dog Treasure Island, 9610 Gulf Boulevard. Why Sea Dog, you ask? Well, it's locally owned with locally produced brew right here in Florida. It's also a place for fun, food, and drink on the coastal Blind Pass waterfront. Ice Pick draft drinks, Sea Dog Blue Paw, and a Mug Club rewards program. Get all this to go with a family-owned breakfast experience with homemade biscuits and more. Open 8 a.m. to late night. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com. While there, enter to win Tampa Bay tailgate tickets near Ray J for Bucks home games. Sea Dog Brewing, Treasure Island. It's where Tampa Bay family and friends go to enjoy life from breakfast to late night. 9610 Gulf Boulevard, Shipyard, Sea Dog Brewing. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Pulling out all the stops in the fourth.
All right, let's go.
Time to bring it home with the dub.
Yeah. Let's get rocking.
Stick to the game plan with a Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Let's rock this joint.
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on a Super Saturday, this September 9th. We are live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, and of course on 13th and Central, across from Tropicana Field. We're at 410 today. They do battle again. Is it 410? Yeah, I believe it is 410.
Yeah, that
sounds Seattle Mariners and what looks like a battle of potential, well, definitely playoff teams. And last night we got a nice win. And baseball, Ben Botham's back in the house, Savannah State graduate. He's a Seminole baseball assistant coach, and he had to do a little, and our next guest will appreciate that, he had to do a little field cleanup for the team.
Oh, yeah, Mike, you would have died seeing me out there with the rake and the hose out there. It was,
I'm a good old Iowa boy. We don't mind picking up a rake, and you guys in Florida.
Why don't you come out next time, Mike? We'll get you out there.
I can direct traffic.
Direct traffic. Okay, we'll get you on the gator then.
Exactly. Well, this gentleman, he's kind enough to take time at least once or twice a year to join us on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. He, of course, is Dan McCarney, former Iowa State head coach, went to University of Iowa, had a stint in Wisconsin. I can't even read his resume so long, take a half an hour. North Texas State, USF, and, of course, Florida got himself a national championship ring. And now he's living the great life of retirement, his beautiful bride, Margie. How are you, my man?
Great, Mike. Great to be with you guys. I'm telling you what, America comes alive when college football starts, doesn't it?
You think? Are you home in Sarasota? Are you up north? The big Iowa State game.
No, I've been asked to come back to both Ames and Iowa City for games. since I retired. It's just too hard, Mike. I spent 31 years combined at those two schools. So when I get to, when it's time for kickoff today at 3:30, I'll be right in front of my television right here and cheering on both teams.
There you go. And, of course, you know, when you look at the landscape of college football, and this is one of the things that really concerns me, is these rivalries across America. You know, and they may not have significance in the polls. They may not have significance in the playoffs at the end of the year. But the reality is they're very important to the states, the communities, and some of them 100 years old. What's your opinion on that, Mac?
Yeah, Mike, I'm going to tell you, I'm the wrong person to try and win over that we should eliminate rivalries and go along with the new schedules of the future. I'm just not buying it. I grew up with some watching some of the greatest rivalries in the history of college football. Then I got to be part of them as a player, and then I spent half a century, almost half a century, coaching in some of the great rivalries in the history of college football. So I love them. I respect them. I appreciate them. You know, it's really important that we teach our young people when they're in, no matter what the sports are. Mine was football, wrestling, and track in high school, and then football at Iowa. But to respect the game, respect the integrity of the game, respect the history of the game, respect the rivalries like you're talking about. And one of those great ones that I got to coach in 25 times just happens to be in Ames, Iowa today. But those things are so meaningful. So now that we've got all the realignment and teams jumping all around the country and coast to coast and all the new formations of conferences, I hope we don't lose those rivalries throughout that, because nobody's going to be playing all 12 games, conference games. I don't believe that's going to happen. Now, whether you have one or two or still three chances to schedule your own teams, find a way to keep those rivalries alive and well. It's great for college football. It's great for the young men. It's great for the history of the game. And it's especially great for the alumni of all these universities around the country, Mike, that were a part of those rivalries and really understand them, respect them, and enjoy being a part of them.
Yeah, as I look across the landscape of America and see some of these rivalries that go, you know, generational, families surrounding the television and having a lot of fun, and we'll be doing that in the state of Iowa at 3:30 kick today. It concerns me. So let's talk about, as you watch, and we've talked about this, USF, Florida State, Florida, and Miami, and UCF. You know, they went through a period where all this high school talent was leaving the state, and now they're able to, you know, do a little bit better job of recruiting. But it doesn't matter where you're at in today's world. How would you have handled this portal and they can change teams, you know, at the drop of a hat? How would you have navigated that, my friend? I know you would have figured out a way, but it's kind of brutal.
Oh, it's tough, Mike. Really tough. That part, I missed so much of the game. Unfortunately, I still have a lot of guys out coaching. I get to stay close to them and stay in touch and get to games. But that one, there is no blueprint for the transfer portal. And what I don't like about it, I understand when players just giving it everything they got and they're not happy and they're not playing, get an opportunity to move. What's evolving to, as you know, you're getting lots of proven players that are just looking for the best money. Where's the best money from the NIL? Who can pay me the most? And then I just turn my back on the staff, the head coach, the people that brought me here, helped me grow from a young boy, which almost 99% of high school players are, even though they think they're grown men. They're not. They're still little boys when they come out of high school, and they need that maturation process and the mentoring of a really good coaching staff and a real good head coach. And you just turn your back on them and say, hell with it, I'm going to go over here because I got a lot more money. So I'm all for doing more for student athletes, men and women, no question. And I fought for that all the years that I was in it. But the intention wasn't for let's go to the highest bidder. The intention wasn't for players to have all this extra money in their pocket and then they're going to go out and gamble on football games. That was never the intention of the NIL. And it would really be tough. But nowadays, Mike, as you probably know, every football staff in America, and especially the Power Fives, they have a complete staff, whether it's one or two or three guys that are completely dedicated and committed to following, watching the transfer portal, and then staying on top of those guys as soon as they sign the papers and they're okay to transfer. This is the thing we've got to do. Here's the guy we need. Here's the guys that we need to recruit. So it's a whole different world out there now. And those two things, honestly, unbelievable opportunities that I had. I was in the right place at the right time with some incredible Hall of Fame people. But I wouldn't miss those two things had I been a part of it and I got away from it. I never was a part of the transfer portal. You always had to miss the season if you left. And I'll tell you this much, I've laughed and we've kidded and told a lot of stories with a lot of my fellow coaches through the years. There's so many of some of the best players we coached in our entire careers had the transfer portal been in place as freshmen, and we're on top of them, we're kicking them in the butt, get up, you got to go to early workouts, you got to go to class, you got to go to tutors, you got to go to treatment, you got a dental appointment, you name it. And when they got tired of that, especially as freshmen, they would have just packed their bags and took off, because many of our best players tried to leave. But the one thing that we had was that leverage of you leave, you transfer, you got to sit a year. And many of those guys went on to become some of the best players of the schools that I coached at.
And that's what that's what really concerns me is, if you're an old school coach, you are definitely being put out to pasture, because these kids don't have to have to listen to you. They can move on at any time they want, just based on the whim. Maybe their dad gets in their ear. It's a very, very slippery slope, wouldn't you say?
No question. And, the thing, Mike, you and I both appreciate this a lot. We come from the state of Iowa. It's not true with every Iowan, but when I tell people around the country what's so special about the state of Iowa, one of the first things that comes to mind to me is loyalty. That's who we are from the state of Iowa. That's really important in our lives, and it has been, is now, and always will be for Iowans. And loyalty is a dying trait. You see it in families. You see it in businesses. You see it in athletic teams. No question. And, that unconventional, unconditional, phenomenal loyalty that you preach and you teach and inject it into the DNA of hopefully your family and your football team and your business, it's really a dying trait. And I hate to see that, because as both of us know, loyalty is one of the most important things that were a part of our lives as we grew up in the state of Iowa.
I just I followed a story this past week regarding this topic. Dabo Sweeney of Clemson, of course, with incredible success, and his young quarterback, his name escapes me right now. He went out to Oregon State and he had a great game under center quarterback, and of course, then they get upset by Duke. I don't know if it was an upset. Duke looked pretty solid, but the reality is then the dad went on, who knows, Twitter, it nauseates me. But anyway, he went on and said, Sweeney, you're going to have to get up with the times, realize that the portal is the recruiting. And it's a fact, but here's Dabo wanting these kids to stick around as long as they can, and get this winning culture, no different than Kirk does up in Iowa or any of the schools that have had tenured coaches. But when you hear stories like that, these coaches, you got to get a real young staff, because you're going to be running around, and I hate to use this term, but I'm going to, kissing butt for a lot of these kids to come to your program, handing them Benny Franklin's. You did that back in the day. I mean, your program's done.
Well, that was all part of it. Recruiting, obviously, Mike, through the years, is the lifeline. It's the bloodline of your program. But it used to be that the most important things were the relationships that you built, the system that you have, the head coach, the future of your program, the support of the fans, the facilities, the education, the atmosphere that you have. Can you achieve all your goals and dreams in college with that? And a whole bunch of that's going to the wayside, and we all know that. It doesn't have to be spelled out. Now it's coming to a lot more, what can you do for me through the NIL? How much money can I get? A whole bunch of that's going on long before any young man ever hits the college campuses. And what I worry about, and I don't like this at all, because I grew up in a blue-collar family. That's what I was raised in, hard work. Today's culture is raising young people a lot more to be entertained instead of challenged. And we always tried to embrace the challenges. I always told my coaches and my players, don't take it personal. Somebody challenges you. It's moments like these that will make you stronger and better as time goes on. You got to have this stubborn insistence on pursuing your dreams and goals, but you got to go through some hard times. And what I worry about now is, as soon as it gets tough, transfer. As soon as it gets hard, transfer. As soon as it gets tough, and I transfer portal. And that's what I don't want to see, because it's easy, and we both know this. Like, as soon as you quit at something once, it makes it a hell of a lot easier to quit the next time. And then the next time, and then the next time. And what are you going to do, transfer through life every time it gets tough? You got to bow your neck and grow up and be a grown-ass man sometimes and deal with the adversity and the hard times and the tough times, and then never forget this. Things worth accomplishing are always going to be difficult. It's easy to be average. It's easy to be half-assed. It's easy to be just okay. It's hard to be elite. It's hard to be real good. But once you get there, it's one of the most gratifying things you can ever accomplish in life.
And it takes you a long ways in life. So let me ask you another question regarding, and I kick off here at noon, and you and I know how deep that rivalry was between Iowa and Nebraska over the years, and I grew up, you know, across the Missouri from Nebraska, so I've never been a Big Red fan. I've respected their program under Dr. Tom Osborne, but I did go to probably a half dozen of the Colorado-Nebraska games back in the day, and that's a heated rivalry. Well, now it really has some significance today with Deion Sanders. I mean, making that transition to Colorado and now taking on the Cornhuskers. What's your opinion of what he's doing in these days over there in Boulder? I was just out there, and I tell you what, it's the buzz around the state. In America.
Well, of course. Well, no question. And phenomenal job that he did to win that game last week and beat a team that was in the... Now, it's not the exact same team, obviously, but it's the same coaching staff. It's the same program that played for the national championship. So, phenomenal. And just bringing any attention, much less national attention like that, to a program that was 1-11, and that might have been the most pathetic excuse for college football. I watched them a couple times last year, about threw up watching Colorado last year. I couldn't keep watching it. And every time that we went out there through the years in my career, we always pulled out of the stadium in Boulder, Mike, and said, how do you screw this job up? I mean, screw this thing up? It's one of the great settings, one of the most beautiful college campuses in America. You're close by the state of California, not far away from California, where you can get all kinds of talent. You go to Texas, obviously. So, phenomenal win. What I really worry about, though, and this is just being honest with you, you ask an honest question, I'll give you an honest answer, Mike. I worry about the next coaching staff that gets fired and the next AD that says, well, listen, this is what Deion Sanders did at Colorado. He ran 81 guys out of there, almost cleaned house on everybody, which are the ones I worry about and I feel bad for. Where did they all end up when they were run out of town? And then he brought in his son, who's probably a future first-round quarterback. He brought in the wide receiver DB, who's definitely a first-round, to build that whole new roster around. And then a whole bunch of really good players wanted to come be a part of that through the transfer portal. So God bless him for building something so fast. And they were well-coached. Watching that game last week against TCU, they were well-coached, no doubt about it, Mike. I just worry about the student-athlete in the future when a program is struggling and the next staff and AD come in and say, all right, let's run all these guys out of here. Let's follow Deion's blueprint and let's start from scratch. That's what bothers me the most.
Well, I don't think we're going to be using the term student athlete down the road sometime. It's just going to be basically, you know, semi-pro paid professionals and the AAA for the NFL. But unfortunately, we know how few of these guys are going to advance to the NFL. They're going to get accustomed to getting paid. They're going to get accustomed to the luxury luxurious life that an athlete is rewarded with in many cases anyway. But it's not reality, and it's going to tarnish the student-athlete experience and the rich traditions. And it's sad, but he figured a way out. And I would like to see a follow-up on. I'd like to see a follow-up on where those athletes ended up, and hopefully they got a chance to play a game that they loved. And in many cases, not their fault that they weren't performing. It's leadership, and it was a toxic environment there.
Well, no question. And like I said, they were. I coached against Gary Barnett, I coached against Rick Neuheisel, I coached against some real successful guys. We won they called it the Tornado Game. It was Gary Barnett in Colorado. They were in the top 25. They came into Ames. We got an hour and 15-minute delay, literally a tornado touchdown about 5-6 miles from Jack Trice Stadium.
I remember it vividly.
Yeah. And we ended up winning that game. We beat a damn good Colorado team. So through the years, there's been some really good Colorado teams, but surely not in recent years. And now the whole country is going to be watching Colorado. Obviously, they're going to be watching the game with Nebraska that's going to be kicking off here soon. And so the AD and Deion and everybody out there is rolling and they're feeling good, and good for them. I mean, God bless them for what they're doing and trying to bring respect and honor back to the program. I just simply am not trying to throw a wet blanket on anything. I just worry about those young people that were tossed out the back door. Where are they at, like you said, Mike? Are they still going to get a chance to get their college education? They didn't come to Colorado anticipating somebody was going to tell them, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out of here. They came there trying to achieve their dreams and their goals in college, and that sure didn't work out. So that's the thing I worry about. And but it sure makes for an exciting game here today. And Colorado and Nebraska go way back to the old Big 8 and the Big 12 days, as you know, Mike.
Well, Mac, I know you got to get yourself ready. You got 3.5 hours to settle in and watch our Iowa State and Iowa Hawkeyes. I'm looking forward to it myself. I've got some Hawkeyes and Cyclones in the house right now down here at Ferg's. Got to get you back up here. We got all kinds of changes since the last time you were up here a couple of years ago, and or I got to get down to Sarasota. We got to hook up again, my friend.
Sounds good, Mike. Always great to be with you. I do a lot of these things, but it's always fun to work with a real professional, which you are. And I appreciate the $20 that you sent me for me to say that.
All right, Mac. Have a great weekend, my man.
See you, Mike. Great to be with you, buddy. Take care.
You too. Dan McCartney, and I just love that guy. He built the Iowa State program from the ashes, essentially, and then he helped. Launch USF back in the day with Jim Leavitt, and then he won a national championship with Urban Meyer as one of the coordinators under the Tim Tebow era. So he's had a lot of success, and he loves it here in Florida. So it's always great to get him to come on and provide a little input. So, my man, you're probably going to have to take a nap today. You're going to have to get some Ben Gay on your joints. You're 25 years old now. It had to be really tough.
Yeah, once I turned 25, it was all downhill from there. And body's aching. Joints are hurting. All the above. Just, it was a long day out there, Mike. It was nice and hot. But, you know, we got the job done. Field's looking really good, so I'm pretty happy.
Good. Well, of course, tomorrow you're going to go to the game, and that is that game four of this series. And did you watch any of the game last night?
Yeah, I caught a little bit of it there. I mean, for us to have another comeback win. I love seeing the Rays being able to knock it out like they are right now. And it seems like the team's truly in good form. We're a team that's been beaten and battled through adversity. And
it's amazing right now.
It's crazy that they're able to do with the talent that they have. Guys that they pick up, either through AAA, waivers, however they've done it, they found a way to make it through this this adversity that I don't think any other team has really faced quite like us, with all the instances of Tommy John, all kinds of other soreness, pulled muscles, other reasons for players not being there. It's just great to see that these guys and that Kevin Cash has been able to help these guys through it and really wrangle the guys in and give them the motivation to keep powering through.
All right. Well, hour number two, we'll talk a little high school baseball. We'll continue our conversation. We'll talk Bucks and Vikings tomorrow. I'm sure you're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk a little highlight. Do you even know what that is?
I love highlight.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk to a former professional, Jeff Williams. We'll talk a little high life, living the high life. We'll be back on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network.